Welcome to HoneyMonkey. I'm Adam Barrow. What do a shearer, an animal pregnancy scanner, an airline pilot, and ballooning have in common? The answer is today's guest, Tim Wilkinson. Tim is a lead protagonist in the birth of modern Annex 2 ballooning in the UK. More commonly, we know that as experimental ballooning around the rest of the world. Tim is a force of nature when it comes to his passion for life and encouraging and training other people to get involved in building their own balloons. Tim comes from a family of fixed-wing pilots, with his grandfather and father being pilots. His four daughters are also now pilots. Aviation runs in his veins, but his primary career has been in agriculture, specifically pregnancy scanning animals. At 40, Tim decided it was time to make a shift in career and set about becoming a commercial airline pilot, and did this successfully for the next 18 years. Tim owns the Sackville Lodge Farm and its airfield in Bedfordshire in the east of England, about 2 hours north of London. This forms the base for his balloon building exploits, and for the past 10 years, it's also been the host venue for the Grassroots Balloon Festival. He's been the chief flying instructor for the local gliding club, and is a true enthusiast in all senses of the word. After a few attempts to catch up, Auntie Monkey finally had the chance to sit down with Tim at the recent experimental ballooning meet in Post Mills, Vermont. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to Auntie Monkey, Tim.
Thank you.
Can you give us a bit of a background of how Sackville came about?
Okay, well, it goes back an awful long way. Sackville is actually Sir John Sackville was given the rights to the area, and the back in, I think it was King John or something, or definitely back to the Magna Carta. That's how, you know, where Sackville comes from. And I didn't want to get it personal, so we called it Sackville after that. So that's where the name comes from. Okay. From many, many years ago. So Sackville itself, I'm Tim Wilkinson. I've lived at Sackville all my life, got up to near retiring, but I've always had an airfield that goes back to grandfather flying just after the war. And he had aircraft there, and then after that, he packed up and the place went dormant for a while, and then I picked it up. I've got four daughters. Grandfather was flying, father was flying, I fly, and then my daughters fly. So we've got four generations of pilots in the family, as it were, going back through.
Which is amazing. Exactly. In itself. There's not too many families
that can say that. Continuity of it, but obviously grandfather and father are dead now, but you know, this is the sort of tradition of what goes on. But Sackville was very much a case of trying to create, keep going, the gliding club.
Okay.
Which was up at the local military establishment, and it was restricted to members. So we sort of brought Sackville back into the frame again and got flying again. The hangar at Sackville was built in 1946 out of old lorry chassis after the war. That's the original hangar. The airfield itself was three sheep's fields, which we lined up, and then since then I've managed to buy the airfield off the farm.
Okay.
So I actually own the airfield to keep it going, so that I could keep the continuity there. But the main thing has always been to introduce and to bring in new members, new people into flying all the time. So in the gliding side, I ended up being the chief flying instructor of the gliding club. We couldn't afford all these fancy glass fibre machines, so we had Sackville Vintage Gliding Club, and we bought in all the old aeroplanes. I was given aeroplanes. I've got 16 gliders at home.
Are they like the trainers, like the sled trainers
all
and that sort of vintage?
All the old wooden fabrics that nobody wanted.
And they just said, Tim will
take them. Yeah, somebody can store them. Tim can store them. So that's how we've ended up with all these gliders.
It seems like a big step to go from being an airline pilot to then, you know, and then saying I'm going to build a balloon. So you'd obviously had exposure to balloons sometime prior to that, had you? You didn't?
No, or
you
just... I've only been flying balloons 10 years.
But okay.
I've got an awful lot of flying from the commercial airline, flying from being the chief flying instructor on the gliding side at home,
yeah,
and flying ordinary aeroplanes around. But the manufacturing or making of balloons was really because I've always been industrious. I used to manufacture Revival Am heat warming boxes and mobile sheep dips and things like that.
Yeah.
So the background for me has always been turning my hand to anything,
jack
of all trades.
Yeah.
And that's how I've progressed forward. As an airline pilot, I've been airline flying for 18 years. I was expecting to get to 65 before the company retired me. And 3 years early at 62, they made me redundant along with six other senior pilots, which reduced their income.
Okay, who were you flying for?
I was flying for a little company called Scott Airways.
Okay.
And they moved everything, the base, up to Scotland and offered me a base up there or given me redundancy. So with the redundancy, the girls don't like you hanging around the house. So I found a sewing machine, I got some fabric, and there was no real home building going on in the UK.
Yeah.
So I bought the sewing machine, I bought the fabric, I found an old balloon which I stripped out, an 8-gore Colt 65D. I stripped it out, and this one chap said, "Oh, you can rebuild these, Tim, they're Annex 2, which is the equivalent to your experimental or home building. So I got the fabric, I stripped out the old one, and one way or other, we managed to sew together the first balloon. Then somebody told me that there was some air tour designs that they'd got.
Yeah, so just for the people who don't know, who's Air Tour?
Air Tour is a little company going back into the late 80s that were making balloons, and they set themselves up, they were manufacturing, and in the UK we'd got thermal aircraft, we'd got Colts, we've got Thunder, we've got Cameron's, of course, and Lindstrand. And this little old fella, there's Bob and Carol Howes, who are really well known in the UK. They built 13 balloons, and then the recession came in and they stopped manufacturing. Mm. And there was a chap called Peter Bish who actually cleared out the factory.
Yeah.
And in it, he kept the plans for the original Air Tours.
Yep.
So he lent me, or we actually managed to go back through the owners who actually still own the rights for the balloons.
Okay.
And we built the three balloons that they used to make, which was the 31, a 56, and a 77. We had a bit of a struggle trying to find the 31 plans, but Bishop got the 56 and the 77. And when we built those plans, they were all made out of 1 meter 300 fabric instead of 1 meter 500. So we got an awful lot of waste.
Mm.
But we made all three balloons. So we have, you know, sort of like keeping history alive with that side of it.
Which is an important thing to do as well, to keep that shape. And
so that's it. So that came in. And then we wanted to think about building with the full fabric use. So one of our members, who's a CAD designer, said, "Oh yeah," he says, "I'll actually, I can redesign it for you," as you do.
As you do.
And so he redesigned the whole thing to take the 1 meter 500 based on the designs of the Air Tours.
Right.
It was phenomenal. So the BM designs, what happened there is that...
That's Brian Mead, who did the engineering, did the CAD work for you, is that
and
right?
It was so funny because Brian Mead, we got him, we built him a balloon and he went to register it down at the Civil Aviation Authority. And all of our balloons has been Sackville because it's at Sackville Farm where we make them. And then it's been series 1, 2, or 3, whatever. And then before it was AH was the Air Tours. Now it's just a Sackville.
Yeah.
And then BM for Brian Mead and the size.
Yeah.
So we've got a full range now, but we can do anything because Brian will just do another design for it, whatever you wish. So it's been quite interesting. But he went to register this with the Civil Aviation Authority. And they said, "Yes, but who's the maker?" And he said, "Oh, Brian Mead." And then the type was a BM and a 90. And the woman behind the counter at the Civil Aviation Authority said, "Oh, you're the Brian Mead, are you?" So ever since then, we've been we've been teasing Brian about being the Brian Mead. So he's made it even bigger by putting capital "the" Brian Mead. So it's very much, we've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a great hobby.
So when did the first one that you built, that you put together, when was that?
It's only 4 years ago.
So four years in, you said, "Oh, we've done one," and then... You decided then to go and build another one straight after that?
The first year, we actually built four.
So who's we? Just for the audience, who's we?
Well, we've got a little group of us around, but mainly myself actually doing the building to start with. But Barry Newman, one of our members, he's stepped into the fray and he tends to supply me with all the cut bits. And he's made two of his own balloons as well.
Okay.
Brian Mead tends to bring in the paperwork and then we put it onto templates. And then the templates we put onto the cutting table. I mean, the material we've managed to source by finding out who was supplying the manufacturers with the materials. But then I found myself 2 years ago in quite a peculiar position, because Lindstrand had been sold and they closed it up. Cameron's closed up Lindstrand. And as Don said, there just wasn't enough work for everybody. The pound had gone up as competition on the in Europe. So then I found myself the second largest manufacturer of hot air balloons in the UK. It was ridiculous, you know, but there I was. I was the second largest manufacturer of hot air balloons. Well, say manufacturing, it's not really right to call it manufacturing.
A builder,
perhaps. It's a home builder.
Yeah.
And as a home builder, we've had a great lot of fun. And I've been encouraging all these other people by putting in a lot of stories about what we've been doing in Aerostat magazine in the UK. Mm-hmm. And people are now coming forward and going, you know, and I'm encouraging them. I'm a bit of a sod in the fact that I keep on sort of like, oh yes, and when's the wife going to be told about the fact that I've got all this black fabric for you to build the next balloon? And we've managed to get so far, oh, how many? I think we've had 6 different people make their own balloons so far.
Wow.
That were never thinking of building, and there's another 3 at the moment in the process of building. There's another 3 behind them looking at building.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the Annex 2 in the UK is an unreal position, because I think what happened is that when they were making up the legislation under the EASA, European Aviation Safety lot, they put all the regulations in for the commercial balloons, for the commercial manufacturers, and then I think it must have been Friday afternoon when they decided that there was no Annex 2 or home building or experimental building going on in the UK, and said, well, there's nothing of that, so we won't do anything. Some 15, 20 years later, I went to the Civil Aviation Authority and asked them, what do I have to do to comply? There are no rules. Go away. We don't want to know about you. And now we've got a situation in the UK is that the only person that actually asks for anything about the balloons is, we have to register them with the G register, of course. But the only person that asks for anything is the insurance company saying, well, just get somebody to look at the balloon, will you?
So that's it.
It's as simple as that.
That's fantastic.
It is unreal. Absolutely unreal. But here comes the but. We've got no paperwork.
Yeah.
We've got no bits that recognise us as doing something that is sensible.
Yeah.
So we've got a problem, and part of the reason being over here in the USA is to actually find ways or means of establishing ourselves so that we're recognised and we can actually fly these balloons anywhere around the world.
But so at the moment you're just you're contained only to the UK.
Yep.
Can you take them to Europe or just
the
UK?
We have had a special permission for METS last year with a few balloons. That's been a sort of like a stepping stone that we're starting to work on. But we've got a lad over in Belgium building a balloon, but they threw him the commercial manufacturer's book at him when they got no experience of anything else. So he's struggling a bit at the moment. We've got to try and help him. And what we're doing at home is that when people come, one of the biggest problems they have, they haven't got a big enough table to cut the templates and the panels out. So they come over, I've tried to store up as much fabric as possible at home, and they pick out the colours and what they want, we put it onto the table, we'll put down 16 layers of fabric for each panel and just pull them out, whatever. And we just cut them all out, we give them a couple of days of sewing, and then send them home with a sewing machine, and off they go, and they start building their own balloons. And it's a bit stressful sometimes, because, I mean, it doesn't all go right all the time, but these are a lot of people with no other experience and no other skills building their own balloons.
And do you find it's one particular type of person that's doing it, or is it a real mixed bag of
You never know who's going to come through the door and go, I want to build a balloon.
Mm.
And, I mean, I'm trying to do it for cost for them without very little. Well, yeah, if the bank manager saw what I was doing, he'd have a fit. And if the wife knew what I was doing, she would definitely have a fit. But the whole thing, I mean, like at home, we built all these BMs so that we got a range to show people.
Sure.
We built the air tour ones because they were there and I wanted to keep history alive.
Mm.
And I love teaching and training people and keeping things going. And this is what has happened. And the British Balloon and Airship Club in the UK awarded me with a certificate of merit to helping balloon in the UK. And then this last year, a full trophy saying how much I'd helped the UK industry, ballooning industry, which was, to me, was sort of like, wow, this is something out of ordinary. I've not realised. And then I come here and I'm looking around and going, I'm small fry. I really haven't got a clue what's going on in the rest of the world. So I'm picking up ideas and like meeting yourself, Adam. Yeah. I'm coming over and I'm meeting yourself. I've been following what you've been doing in US, in Australia. I went over to Waikato, to the Hamilton Balloon Group
event.
There.
It's a good event.
And I ended up giving them an evening talk about what I was doing in the UK and sort of like looking at what they were up to. Now I'm here and I'm going, wow, this is something different. It's opened up my eyes and I'm just, you know, a little small fry fella compared to what they've managed to achieve. And it's fantastic. But what is really fantastic about the whole thing is that the innovation and what they're doing and what I've been doing, and it's all building up to a whole group of people around the world. Mm. And it's become a very small place, the world. And there's such a lot of things happening. And it's such an interesting, just as a hobby itself, in building a balloon and seeing it fly. And the number of times you get people that turn up and go, you know, somebody in the crowd that knows you will go, he built that balloon himself. And it's always, he what? There's always that second bit that comes back and says, he actually built that himself? Yeah. You know, what a fantastic hobby. What a fantastic time.
I think it's a real, exactly what you say, like it's, the world's becoming so much smaller. We can all see what each other's doing, whether it's via email or you can just ring someone now, or it's internet. It's just made things hugely different with it's Facebook fantastic. And those things. Yeah. With groups of builders getting together and just discussing ideas. My view of it is I think we're really, as you say, building up to this really important point, but it's almost like we're going back to our beginnings.
Well, the interesting part was, I mean, I turned up here and I'm sort of like going, wow, this is Brian Boland and all the rest of it. And he showed me his new basket, and around the top it was struggling a little bit to get things matched. And I said, well, why not cut the corners out? And there is an idea that's coming from a lad that's built his own basket in the UK. Mm. And he's trying to go sub 20 kilos. And here we are with baskets here at 20 pounds,
yeah.
You know, which is a phenomenal change. Yeah, but ideas are coming in from everywhere. But everybody's open about their ideas. We're all sharing these ideas.
Yeah.
And the main manufacturers really ought to stand up and come over and have a look at everybody and what they're up to and keep their ears and eyes open, because it's just phenomenal what's coming out of the woodwork from people, what they're doing.
It's like innovation. There's a number of things. You know, innovation, traditional innovation, is often top down. It's being directed, you know, like you've got, like, and let's say it's a manufacturer, you've got the big guys.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. But what's happening now is you get this groundswell of people all talking to each other, yeah. And it's really bottom up innovation.
It.
So the people are out there doing things and trying things because we can, because we've got the time, or, you know, we've got the interest.
Well, we haven't got the legislation and all the other stuff holding us down.
Mm.
And that's the beauty about us in the UK and yourselves here with Experimental. You know, they'll allow us to do what we like as long as we don't go and kill ourselves.
Yeah,
you know, and
still got to be
but
safe.
But it's in our own interest not to kill ourselves anyway, so there you go. And the whole thing is, it's a wonderful sort of like volcano ready to erupt with ideas.
Mm.
Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And don't be afraid to fail, because quite often you succeed.
Mm.
And it's just wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And that's, you know, that's where we go, that's what we do.
Well, life's a series of failures until you succeed, isn't it? So it's just a learning exercise until you get where you are. But it must be nice to have that now that you're, let's call it, retired.
Retired
from the
real pregnancy scanning sheep and cattle.
But from the flying career, that's
that's
finished up. But yeah, it's you know, it's nice to have something that still enables you to keep
that
aviation.
I've never retired. I've just moved on into other things.
That's a nice way to look at it.
I won't retire. That's a death trap. What I do is that I've always said I'll keep moving on to the next idea, project, different things, whatever. And it's fantastic what you can do if you put your mind to it.
Yeah.
And the number of people that we've trained and taught, and I never realised I could. And once they've built their own balloons, their own esteem of what they've managed to achieve just goes through the roof.
Mm.
They can't believe that they've managed to build a balloon themselves, and their own, you know, their own confidence grows. And like with, I mean, one of the things with flying, when I teach people to fly and you get them going solo, what they realize is that being okay to fly on their own, they've realized the whole world is open to them. They can do a lot more now. And that has been fantastic, because it gives people the confidence, and it doesn't matter what they're doing. If you can train somebody, that's a fantastic thing to show that you can actually move on to them some information that you own, well, not own, but you have acquired. And that's quite often from other people that have trained you that have got that little spark of life of showing you a way to go forward. Mm. It's just phenomenal. But what is absolutely essential to all home builders, and please take this as a warning, do not inflate your own balloon that you've just built yourself, because you'll never see it. You're in the basket. Let somebody else inflate it for you and stand back and watch your creation go up into the air for the first time. That is magical. Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, and the person inflated it won't burn it because they're too scared. But, and you can see the smiles on the face and the beaming, and just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
And so how many balloons? You said you've got six different people building. How many balloons have you put through at Sackville Farm?
There's 20, in the last 4 years, there's 20 balloons out there at the moment. Four of them are in the process of being made, and 16 have actually been made. Mm-hmm. I think that's the number, but it keeps changing because we keep adding more in there. As I say, to be the second largest manufacturer of balloons in the UK is just unreal. You know,
how's Don with that? Have you talked to Don about that and said,
I'm chasing you down? Oh, I regularly talk to Don. I've got no problem. Don is a fantastic person, and he's had to be, not scrupulous, he's had to be hard on his on the business side to make it work and keep going. And I mean, they've been through some very tough times.
Mm.
And the industry itself, from the back in the 80s when it was at its best, is just nothing but shrunk, and that's a shame, because it's such a lovely sport. And but the big thing about the sport is the number of people you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And I mean, every time I travel around the world, I meet people from other parts of the world, and wow, what a place to be. You know, it's so wonderful, and it's the camaraderie, and it's the, I mean, we've met people here that, well, we never even knew existed and didn't know what they were doing, and, you know, but wow, what a place to come and see what's going on. And
well, it doesn't get any better than this. We're currently sitting in one of Brian's hangars on his airfield. Brian Boland's hangars. They've got a couple of planes around us. We've got a couple of balloons in the shed as well. And it's just like, anything you want to do here, this is the place you can do it. Just come and
it's be even involved. Even my wife saying, can we buy somewhere here? What? This is a complete change from what she's been like. You know, she thinks it's fantastic. But as you say, I mean, looking around these hangars with the power aircraft here and the gliders outside and up in the museum there, he's just a hoarder. He doesn't let anything go, and it's just fantastic what he's done. And they nearly put the balloon through the flaming window on the on the museum this morning, which was quite amusing. But I mean, you look here and you look around and what's been going on, it's just phenomenal, absolutely brilliant.
And it's great to see the energy here. That's what I've realised. It's my first time here.
Yeah,
but it's
likewise.
Like we've got 40 experimental balloons flying here. There's another, you know, 100 in the shed sitting around, but everyone here is just enthusiastic, and it's like being a young kid again, isn't it?
Well, somebody said I'd already won the race, and I said, well, what do you mean run the race? And he said, well, you've got far more toys than I have, Tim, or anybody.
Yeah.
But Brian's got more than I've got.
He who dies with the most toys wins, Tim.
Wow. Yeah, but it's just absolutely extraordinary what Brian has managed to achieve here and what's going on. And
I think you're catching up in the UK though with what you're doing over there. You're just at the
I was the prime mover embryonic stage of getting something moving that has been dormant, really. And
subsequent to your initial talks with the CAA, are they looking any more now at what's going on? Like, are they happy for you guys to be operating, doing your own thing?
No, we're looking after it. Other people are looking after us, and we've got lots of friends that have got lots of experience and lots of knowledge, and main, you know, sort of repair stations and that. They're and the CAA are quietly looking at it. It's quite interesting. We normally, at all the Bloom meets where I go, they're there, just purely and simply to see us.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're there, they're coming and seeing us and keeping an eye on us, and they've been very happy to leave what's going on.
We're lucky in Australia that the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, CASA,
yeah,
for us, is our CAA, and they're really great. They're really happy to work with us, and they're really encouraging of what we're doing. And, you know, we're not doing anything stupid.
That's right.
It's not in our interest to build something that's going to injure us or kill us. We just want to build something that we can, you know, be proud of and fly and enjoy with our friends and family.
It's just a phenomenal hobby and something that you can... I mean, I'm getting as much buzz out of the fact that I'm teaching people, and we're teaching people to sew and gain skills that they never thought they... Oh, no, that's too difficult. I mean, it was in the belief that, oh, you can't do that because... no way. Everybody can do anything they like if they put their mind to it.
Put their mind to it.
And I mean, when you consider that I was called a dunce and a bloody imbecile at school, and I'm dyslexic, and I used to be teased and saying people would call me Mitt, and it's because I'm left-handed, and on the bus in the dirt on the back of the bus, I'd put Tim, but I'd write it backwards. And so I got this, you know, nickname of being Mitt. But one thing being dyslexic is that it's been a fantastic thing that you didn't realise, that it gives you the ability to think laterally, other ways,
yeah,
and develop things and do things.
Not as structured.
Yeah, and that in itself is a great asset to me. Absolutely fantastic. Can't bloody read properly.
How did it go with your aviation career?
It was difficult, but I made it through. And I mean, as one of the girls in the, one of the hostesses on the airline, she said, "We know you'll always get us home, Tim." Because I could always think of ways of getting through and doing things. And,
yeah,
you know, for the airline, I was there on one company for 18 years. Brilliant. Life's what you make it. And it's up to you as an individual what you want to do.
Mm.
And, I mean, my kids, you know, I've got four daughters at home. And they, right from the beginning, I said, "Well, I'm not running your life because it's enough struggle to run my own. But it's up to you, and don't you complain if you're not doing something. It's up to you, your life, you make the effort, and you can do anything you like in the world." And, you know, for me being a dunce and imbecile, and all those years I was led to understand I would be no good, I finally at 40 picked myself up off the floor and decided to do something. Went into being a commercial airline pilot, and spent 2 years and all the money from scanning to actually be one.
Mm-hmm.
Changed my life around.
Yeah.
And it's when you realize yourself what you can do, what you want to do, it changes your whole life. Of you just suddenly realize the world's your oyster.
Hmm.
And one of the funny things, like when I was pregnancy scanning sheep in New Zealand, it was absolutely hilarious because the lads there say, "Well, you know, 3 months of the year you're working hard scanning sheep. What else do you do?" And I said, "Oh, I'm an airline pilot." "Well, no, you're not," they said. I said, "Yeah, I am. I said, I'm an airline pilot." Anyway, 3 days of scanning on this farm, and they were teasing me about being an airline pilot. And they said, "Well, we would believe you because there's an awful lot you say that sounds right." And I said, "Yeah, but I'm an airline pilot." And they said, "Well, prove it." And actually, after 2 days, I got so fed up, I took my airline pilot's license with me. And I said, "Well, what, you mean this?" And I showed them my airline pilot's license, and I could have just knocked them over with a feather. They just absolutely stunned. And then they said, "Well, what else do you do?" I said, "I'm not telling you. You won't believe me." And they said, "No, Tim, we will, we will." And I thought, "Well, I've got a good one going now." And they said, "So what else do you do?" And I said, "No, it's no point telling you. You're just not going to believe me." I said, "So what, you know, what are you going to do then, Tim?" And I said, "Well, when I finish scanning, I'm going back via NASA and I'm doing the first part of the training course to be an astronaut." "Oh, bloody hell," they went. And I said, "Well, yeah, I told you you wouldn't believe me." And anyway, I went back scanning the next year and they said, "How's the astronaut getting on then?" life's full of fun. You can just enjoy yourself. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Are any of the daughters interested in becoming balloon pilots?
Well, they come up in the balloon odd time. They've been gliding. The youngest one, she completely dipped out and said, I'm not going to be a pregnancy scanning operator, I'm going to do my own thing. She's an artist. And we set her up with a shop in Leicester, and she's a tattoo artist. And she's just incredibly talented. But again, with all the girls, we've encouraged them to do their own thing, to do their own, you know, run their own life. Not for me to tell them how to run their own life, but we're there in the background to help.
Yeah.
And that's just fantastic what they've managed to achieve. They've all achieved their own things, what they want to do. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And have you got grandchildren?
Two little boys.
And have they been in the balloon as well?
One of the daughters. And oh, they're just fantastic at the moment. But my youngest little grandson is, two, and is coming up three.
Okay.
And he, I mean, I've been trying to square up the farm a little bit. And he comes on and he says, Granddad, make mess, big digger. So, yeah, that's what you make it.
So that'll be the next generation of pilots coming through from the family
it's
there.
It's up to them what they want to do. They can do anything they want in the world. And anybody can do anything they want. They've just got to apply the mind. Take your own life in your own hands and make your own decisions and go for it. And do something with your life. Don't just be there, sitting there and deciding that you're in a dead-end job and you don't want to do it, but you've got the commitments. Get out there. Get off your ass. Go out there. Do things.
This is an absolute bucket list item for me. Being here, this is such an important thing. I've wanted to come here since I was, you know, since I can remember, really.
Yeah, likewise.
And so, you know, and you just got to make it happen at the end of the day. Like, if you've got things you want to do, just do
them. I was joking with a few friends of mine and said, come on, let's go over and see Brian Boland's place. And they're here. one of them struggled a bit with holiday time, but from their work, but no.
So what do you think the future holds for the balloon building community in the UK? Are you getting a lot of energy or a lot of communication from people?
I'm the energy. They're feeding off it, and they're lapping up. And once you can get that little bit of spark of life into their life, and they can see that they can obtain things that they never thought possible, their enthusiasm, my enthusiasm goes to them, their enthusiasm moves on to others.
Correct.
And people are coming forward that never even thought about building balloon, and then when they start building what so-and-so managed to get me into this idea. But it's just fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
And as you said before, the sense of that personal achievement when you complete it and brilliant. You stand back and you look at it and you go, wow.
It lifts people into the air, but it lifts their whole ability and ideas. And the thing is, once they've done something like this that they thought was impossible and then move forward, wow.
Yeah.
Life becomes an adventure, and this is why on the top of my hat it says, you know, it's an adventure. Partly that becomes from my little grandson. He didn't want to do anything, and I said, come on, we're going to go and do something. It's going to be an adventure. So now, you know, it's become my sort of like, not swan song, but my way of going on. People, oh, Tim, what the hell's the adventure this time?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's your personal motto.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a lovely conversation, Tim. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.
Great that we could finally get to reconnect, or to connect, I should say, somewhere, even though it's not in Australia or the UK. We have to come to the US to do it, but it's been an absolute pleasure.
It's amazing where you bump into people and who you come up with. And, you know, I mean, personally, I'm going in and out of New Zealand. I'd like to see more of them and do things. I'm trying to find a way of my home builds to go take them around the world with me here, there and everywhere, meet people all over the place, and just life your own. Do what you want.
Do what you want and live at large.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much, mate.
Very good, sir.
Thank you.
Nice seeing you.
Hi again. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. Just a reminder that you can subscribe to Auntie Monkey via the website www.auntiemonkey.com. You can also subscribe through iTunes or on your Android podcasting app if you really don't like Apple gear. Keep sharing Auntie Monkey on Facebook so that we can make sure as many people as possible can listen. If you write for a local ballooning magazine, why not put in a little plug for us in there as well? In return, you'll receive some great karma. You can give us feedback or suggest guests for us on our Facebook site at www.facebook.com/AuntieMonkey666 or even ask us why we have the number of the beast on our Facebook URL. Thanks for listening.